because if your divorce is dragging on and on and on, here's what I'm going to tell you. One of two things is happening. Either you're not healed and you're trying to emotionally attack this person still, and it's costing you money because attorneys are allowing you to. And if you know that that's you, you need to start on your healing journey. So you may still feel your anger, your frustrations, or your anxiety. And certain messages and situations will trigger the living shit out of you. So it's important that you get on your healing journey immediately when this divorce is final. Welcome back to The Ugly Truth of Divorce. I am your host, Samantha. And today we are going to dive into the things that I wish people would have told me. And I'm your girl. I'm going to tell you the ugly truth. So we're going to dive into what happens after your divorce is final. Does my life change? Does it get better? Does it stay the same? What are things that I think might go away? At least I hope they do. And what shows up for you and your kids post-divorce? Let's get into it. All right. These are going to be the things that no one warns you about after divorce. And that's just not me, right? I'm Sam and I give you the ugly truth. So let's get into it. Everyone thinks that once their divorce is final, life will become calm. Attorneys tell you, Sam, after the ink dries, all the problems go away and you'll find a way to get along with your ex. But if you're dealing with a high conflict co-parent, that is usually when everything really starts to become a challenge. Is you went into it with the falsehood of thinking that the divorce is final, the problems stop. And then you're slapped with reality. And it's just not that way, right? And so we have to make sure that we see all these things coming up, that this is your bingo card for post-divorce life. These are going to be the things that I want to tell you about so that they're not a shock for you. And we're going to break down seven, okay? So number one, the conflict doesn't just end. Court orders don't change behaviors. They really, really don't. High conflict people don't suddenly bump their head and all of a sudden decide to cooperate. You may still deal with the same patterns, the same problems, just in two separate homes. But all the problems of your marriage still exist. The lack of respect, the miscommunications, the laziness, the resentment. It's all there. It's just now in two separate homes. And I think for a lot of us, when we leave a marriage or we leave our spouse, we're from this mindset of like, I want to be away from the arguments. I want to be away from the fighting. I want to be away from them. And with a lot of the ways your parenting plans are written by Larry the lawyer, you're still in that conflict because that parenting plan doesn't protect you. It allows them to still get a hold of you whenever they want with communication. It allows them to still micromanage your home from afar. And so a lot of this can be fixed in a parenting plan, but the conflict doesn't just dissolve into thin air. I wish it did, but it does not, right? Number two, the parenting plan gets tested immediately. Mine, it took about 4 months. For you guys, it could be the next day. It could be the same day. So this is really bad if your parenting plan is written with gray area, vagueness, loopholes, all of that, because it will be exposed. Vague language will create conflict immediately. You'll think it means something. Their ex will think it means something else. And then now what are we left to do? Either call Larry back, our lawyer, or we're going to allow our ex to have their way, or we argue. And the only person that wins there is the high conflict person because now your kids are being affected. So examples of immediate usage is you're going to immediately use your parenting plan to talk about holidays, probably exchanges, but more commonly, your communication rules. Or decision-making. Those will pop up within days, if not weeks, of your parenting plan being finalized. And so it's really important for you to go watch that masterclass that I teach. It's 3 hours long, $127. A workbook comes with it. It is so valuable to not only get education with, but a perspective of what will be the problem areas. Let's make sure we nail down as many of those as we possibly can inside of our parenting plan. So the parenting plan will be used immediately. Be prepared to understand it, to use it, to follow it. And I hope that it's good. If my team wrote it, it's pretty stellar. Number three, that you will still have to interact with your ex. And again, I think this is a misconception where a lot of people think, okay, we're split. We're no longer in the same home. We're divorced. It's done. I don't have to talk to you. Well, that's not necessarily true. Okay. You still will have to discuss some things, emergencies with health, emergencies with transportation, and anything not mentioned in your parenting plan. So if your parenting plan is written vaguely, you will have to engage with your ex, because you will err on the side of caution because you're a rule follower, and you'll simply say things like, well, I don't want to do that without their permission. Well, I don't know that I can do that, so I'm going to ask them. I don't know if I should do that. And so there's a lot of things that'll come up that aren't mentioned in your parenting plan because it was written poorly that you will then have to go engage. And we all know what happens when we engage with our ex. High conflict just automatically ensues. And so these are occasions where parenting plan is vital, but you will be interacting with your ex at school functions, at extracurricular functions, maybe at doctor's appointments. But there will be things like scheduling swaps that will pop up. So you don't fully get to separate from your ex. And here's where high conflict people are one of two ways. Either one, they ice you out, ghost you, and they act like you don't exist and they never respond back to you. Okay, well, that's not going to work because our parenting plan isn't written to where we can do that. And number two, they'll overinsert themselves into absolutely everything. Now, my hope and wish and prayer for you is that there's a compromise of happy medium, you know, where we only talk about what we have to talk about and we don't really hang out any other time than when we absolutely have to and discuss what we have to. But usually in high conflict dynamics, you're dealing with the ghoster or you're dealing with the person that's going to just come for you about every little thing. I used to joke that my ex-husband would come for me if I crossed the street wrong in the wrong socks. That wasn't really a joke. There's not a lot of sarcasm there. That's the truth. And if you know, you know. So divorce doesn't remove your ex. It just restructures it with how you deal with it. Okay. So it will still be there. Again, these are the things I wish people would have told me, that divorce wasn't like a cut and dry, poof, they're gone. They're still there, especially if that parenting plan is written poorly. Number four, emotional triggers. They don't disappear overnight. So you may still feel your anger, your frustrations, or your anxiety. And certain messages and situations will trigger the living shit out of you. So it's important that you get on your healing journey immediately when this divorce is final. Now, people ask me all the time, Sam, can I work on my healing journey during? Well, it depends. I mean, if your divorce is going pretty fast, then, you know, I'd probably wait till we were done. But if it's going pretty slow, then yeah, I'm going to probably have to start my healing journey, because if your divorce is dragging on and on and on, here's what I'm going to tell you. One of two things is happening. Either you're not healed and you're trying to emotionally attack this person still, and it's costing you money because attorneys are allowing you to. And if you know that that's you, you need to start on your healing journey. Or you just have somebody like an attorney that's taking advantage, that they know you're not healed and they know that they can take advantage of you and drag this out. So either you're causing it or an attorney's causing it, but you need to start your healing journey if it's dragging on and on and on, or your ex is using it to come for you because they're obviously not healed. But you have to try to heal yourself so that those emotional triggers dissipate over time. You know, I think now if I took who I am now today in 2026 and put her back in 2008, good Lord, you know, like I would have cut down on 80, if not 90% of the high conflict shit that was going on, because I just wouldn't stand for it. I have hindsight. I'd pick my battles better. I know what hills to die on. I know what hills to let go of. I'd not give a shit. I'd have boundaries. I would have self-love. I'd have self-assurance. I wouldn't give a fuck. Like, who's that? Who this? I don't care. I don't know. Don't want to know. Like, there would be such a different perspective because I'm healed and I'm away from all of that. And I have the hindsight and the perspective and the tools and the abilities. And I wish more of us knew those in the process. I wish more of us knew those immediately as soon as the divorce was over, so that that trauma and drama and abuse doesn't keep happening into co-parenting. Okay. But the emotional triggers will be there unless you heal them. So when they start dating, that may trigger you. Where some of us look at it like, perfect, distraction, love that, easier to deal with, keep going. It all depends on how you feel about it. So your emotions are really important to get a hold of. Number five, that you will still need boundaries, probably more than you had in the marriage. Now, we just did a podcast about boundaries, so go back and listen to that one. But you have to make sure that you have very strict communication boundaries. We talked about in that previous episode about having co-parenting hours. When are you checking your phone? When are you getting time back to them? You know, how are you talking to them? What time of day is appropriate? Are you following the parenting plan strictly? Are you not letting them bother you to where, you know, if they show up to that soccer game, are you losing your mind because they brought their mom or a significant other? Or are you just like, whatever, they came and supported the child. Good. How are you handling that? And so really needing to understand that boundaries with you, that if you know something bothers you, then maybe you don't go. If you know something, reading something late at night bothers you, then maybe you don't read that. I was a big one that if I opened the snail mail that came about the divorce, because again, my divorce is a long, long time ago, but if those manila envelopes arrived in my mailbox, I was not disciplined to have a boundary to not open it. And then I would, and then I would spiral, and then I'm not showing up for myself or my children in the right way. I didn't have a boundary. I had to learn a boundary. I had to learn the boundary that I couldn't tell him to stop, you know, bad mouthing me. That doesn't work. I'd have to say, if you keep bad mouthing me, I'm going to remove myself. I'm not going to tolerate. I'm not going to help you. Right. But I kept putting boundaries on him. And so there's a whole episode on how to have better boundaries with your ex in the situation. But the boundaries are something that you do, not something we force upon the other side. Number six, your kids still need support navigating two homes. And I think a lot of people who don't understand high conflict or a lot of people that don't understand the dynamics of divorce think that kids will be fine. And you know what? I will say in the majority of the situations, kids will be fine. But that's if you give them the tools to survive their life. It's not every day that a kid is okay with having two bedrooms and two different pillows and two different comfort sets and two different beds. That could be very uncomfortable to their body physically. Not to mention, is there a nightlight or not a nightlight? Not to mention, do they take a shower at one house before bed and not the other? Do they go to bed dirty? Do they go to bed brushing their teeth at one house and not the other? There's so many different things. And so helping your child navigate that there's differences between the home. And I just gave examples of physical. We don't even have time to get into all the psychological and emotional differences between the two home, but you are going to have to help your child with the navigation of transitions, that mom isn't at this house and dad isn't at this house. And how does that look? That there's maybe different rules. A big tagline that I said a lot with my kids is, you know, there'd be ruckus and loudness and maybe somebody yelled and maybe somebody hit somebody, maybe somebody dropped something. But I would say, hey, you're okay. But remember, if you do that at the other house, you're probably going to get scolded. So let's be more careful, but look where you're at. Because sometimes I even had to tell my kids, hey, it's okay. Look where your feet are. That's okay. It's okay that you dropped something. It's okay that you spilled something. If my kids were to spill something or make a mess at my house, they'd be frantic. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm like, it took me a long time to figure this out. I'm like, you didn't intentionally do it, correct? No. Then what the hell's the big deal? But it was the way the other household was being ran. And so that was an eye-opener to me of how emotionally dysregulated they felt under that environment and then how they felt at my house, right? And it wasn't always rainbows and unicorns at my house. I had to learn that, wow, we are parenting different. We have different rules. We have different expectations. And I struggle with that a little bit as an adult. I can't imagine a child. But there is the hindsight of this, you know, and the counter to this is I will tell you, is I want you to think about your child going to school every single day. And every day your child has the bus ladies that let him on and off the bus and direct him up the sidewalk. Then they have a classroom teacher and then they have cafeteria people. And then they have their art teacher and they have their PE teacher and they have their librarian. And maybe they have a different substitute on a different day. And guess what? Your kid does fine, right? Your kid does fine kind of changing who they show up as in the library versus the PE room. And so your kid will adapt and will learn that people are different. And I will say this, here's where I think kids struggle. It's okay for a kid to go from PE teacher to classroom teacher, out to recess, into the cafeteria, and they're around all these different adults who have different rules and different expectations, and they adapt and they adapt and they adapt. And there's a difference between going from mom to dad, and they don't sometimes adapt. And here's the things that are different, because it's a great analogy that we hope is true and works. But with school, it's consistent. And there's not a strong emotional attachment to those teachers. Sometimes there is, but it's consistent. That teacher is always like that. That teacher is always like that. At the houses, you may get a version of mom one day that you don't get for three more days. And the same thing can be true at dad's house. He's different every time. And so there's an emotional instability, maybe from home to home, when parents don't know what they're doing yet as a single parent. They haven't quite figured it out yet. And so kids struggle with that inconsistencies. And some kids will take advantage of that and start manipulating the system, right? Just like kids do sometimes with a substitute teacher. Well, we don't normally have to do that. No, we totally get to work together on those things. You know, they manipulate when they know they can. And so it's hard for kids to navigate two homes when they're not consistent homes. So consistency is a real big push here when you're starting out as a single parent. Who are you? What's your bedtime routine? What's the morning wake up? When do we listen to music? How do we play? Am I allowed to be loud? Can I run in this house? What can I holler? You know, like, what are the things that are you now that you're on your own as a single parent, right? You get to navigate now being on your own. So kids don't experience the divorce as a date. They experience when the lifestyle changes, that we're never in the same house anymore together. We're in two separate homes. And what does that feel like? It needs to be conversations. We have to talk to our kids about this. There are tons of books about this as well that you can get on Amazon and help and start reading to your kids' books. And I have a little inside scoop that I know an author that's writing a bunch of books about high conflict divorce. So stay tuned, make sure you're liking and subscribing so you guys are some of the first people to get a hold of those books. You have to build your own sense of stability. And we talked about this a little bit here and there in previous episodes, but I will say, once you get yourself figured out and you have a strong sense of who you are, all of a sudden your home becomes this anchor to your children. Once they know that your house is picked up, there's a routine, they can always rely upon their iPad being charged, the snacks are in there, there's always toilet paper on the roll, the nightlight's always on, and they become so comfortable that they know your house is the anchor. But what starts that is you as the parent. You are anchored. You have your bookends every day. You start your day for you. You end your day for you and nobody else. You're a little selfish in the morning and you're a little selfish at night, that you make your life about you first thing and last thing. But in between those two bookends, it's about your job. It's about your kid. It's about providing, and your kid feels that and understands that. So you have to have a routine. So all of you out there that have a messy home and it's cluttered and you're like, well, I'm a type B, Sam. You can be a type B with a picked up house, a clean house, a house that has function, right? We can't have kids growing up in chaos and clutter and shit everywhere and disorganization. We need to have a picked up house. Now, I'm not saying spotless. I'm not saying that at all. You're going to walk out of my house right now. It's not spotless, but it's picked up. It feels warm. It's comfortable. It's livable. So your kids need you to be stable first so that they have a stable place to come with stable people. And this was the biggest one that was a game changer for me. I thought, well, you know, I'm providing this, I'm providing that, I'm providing that. But I was like frantic. My nervous system was shot. And I was trying to control both homes. Well, if he would just do this, things would get better. If he would just do this, things would get better. Whoa, sister. How about you get your own shit under control first before you ever start looking at somebody else's house? And I thought I did. But it wasn't under control because I wasn't. I was frantic. I was disheveled. I was walking on eggshells around myself, right? You have to make sure your house, when they walk in, their shoulders drop. Their heart rate slows down. They're comfortable. They feel okay to go get a snack. They feel comfortable taking their shoes off and laying on the couch. They know they can walk into your bedroom and ask you a question. How comfortable are your kids will be based on how comfortable are you. I see this all the time in public. I see frantic kids, kids that are misbehaving in public, kids that are throwing fits and tantrums and just escalating things. And then I watch to see where they walk. And I watch to see what group of parent they go up to. And without fail, I can tell that that parent is dysregulated, tense, maybe borderline abusive at home, overly just running their mouth too much, screaming and hollering because of how dysregulated that child is, because that parent's dysregulated. And I know it's all the rave right now to talk about, you know, regulation, but it matters on how your kid feels and acts. So you have to get yourself. So if you're somebody like Sam, I'm anxious. I have anxiety. Okay, well, what are we doing about that? What are we doing about that? Are we finding ways to calm ourselves? Are we finding ways to get a hold of the anxiety? What are the triggers? Start there. What are the triggers to your anxiety? And you're going to say, oh, it's my ex. And then I can't get rid of them. No, but you can learn how to better deal with them. You can learn workarounds. You can learn boundaries. We can teach you a whole bunch of things, but what we can't do is keep showing up dysregulated to our children, because that's not working. Because now my kid's going to school dysregulated and acting like a fool. And then they're calling saying, hey, why is your kid bouncing off the walls? Why isn't your kid listening? Why does your kid seem like he's just screaming at everybody? Oh, it's because I'm screaming at home. I watch this all the time out in public. Kid just acting a fool. We were at a restaurant and a kid was standing on a windowsill at a restaurant. And then I looked over to see where that kid walked to. And he walked over to parents that were both on their phones, not paying a lick of attention. And then when they finally looked up, the kid was doing something. They screamed at this child. And it's like, well, maybe if you'd be a little bit more regulated and involved and paying attention and a little bit calmer, that kid wouldn't be out looking for attention standing on a windowsill in a restaurant. So I think it all comes down to how you are is how your kids will show up. But some of you all are dealing with heavy transitions from a house of dysregulation. And so your kids are coming back dysregulated, which sometimes triggers us to be dysregulated. Then we're like, oh gosh, now I'm upset because my kid came home upset. And this is a power struggle to where you have to really hone in to finding your peace so that you can give your kids a home that they want to call home and come home to. All right, in today's episode, we covered things that are going to happen to you post-divorce. And in some of those instances, we can prevent and avoid them happening, or at least make them easier to deal with if we have a really good parenting plan drawn out for us to where we, ex and I, are going to have post-divorce. So if this is something you're interested in, I highly recommend you having our team take a look and help you with your case. But without fail, go back and listen to this again and practice. Okay, I know if this happens, here's how I'm going to handle it. How can I help with transitions home for my children? How can I focus on communication better? How can I show some stronger boundaries? Because just because your marriage was bad and you ended it in divorce doesn't mean co-parenting is just going to jump off with a bang and be easy. You have to make sure that you know all this going into it so you are prepared and that you can make a game plan for it and have strategy and not get caught off by surprise that all this doesn't just fix itself in a divorce. There's actually problems that can still happen in co-parenting.